So now our task is to go about in the second turning of the wheel to figure out what it was the Buddha really had in mind when he talked about things. According to the mind-only school, what was it that the Buddha really had in mind when he taught those five characteristics? We finished the first one, which was the fact that things have no nature of their own, and now we'll be going on to the next four. In general, when we speak about turnings of the wheel, we're thinking about specific texts that typify that turning of the wheel. So we're talking about the second turning of the wheel, or the medium turning of the wheel, in terms of those five characteristics which typify the contents of the second turning of the wheel. And then there are other works or other subjects which typify, which are classic examples of the first turning of the wheel. And so we've been through those, we've been talking about those. When you talk about the third turning of the wheel, the job of the third turning of the wheel was, people came up to Lord Buddha and said, what did you mean during the first and the second turnings of the wheel? So if you're going to talk about what is the content, or what are the classic examples of subject matter that comes up during the third turning of the wheel, well, that would be discussions just like the one we're having now, which is, finding out what it is the Buddha meant during the second turning of the wheel, and specifically during the latter four of the five characteristics which are typical of the second turning of the wheel. So we'll be going now into the third of those sections. Lord Buddha here, when he's discussing the latter four, he will not be covering all three of the groups that he covered when he discussed the first of the five, right? When he discussed the fact that things have no nature, he discussed all three groups of objects. But when he gets to the second part, which is discussing those four characteristics, he's going to be skipping one of those three groups. And in Jetsun Kapa's presentation, Jetsun Kapa is going to be quoting primarily that sutra called the sutra in which the Buddha explains his true intent during all the other sutras, which is called Dode Gongyo. And then he's going to go on to quote, as necessary, the great forefather, which is called the great Kembo, right? Like almost the great abbot or the great master of the mind-only school, which will be Master Sangha. And then he'll also be drawing in Master Vasubandhu and other great masters as needed in his presentation. So that's where we're going now.
Mm-hmm.
In the next presentation, which is the latter four of the five, right? I've already mentioned that he's going to leave out one of the groups. He's not going to treat one of the groups. Don't forget that the first of the four is going to be called looking into the fact that the arisal of things or the beginning of things is not something which happens of its own accord or by definition. So if you had to guess which of the three groups might be left out in this discussion, which one do you think it would be? If we talk about a growing of things which does not exist by definition, if I say I'm about to teach you what the Buddha meant when he said things don't grow of their own accord or by definition, then which of the three groups do you think he's going to leave out? Yongdu Bina. You know, we're talking about what do you think and what could it be, and at this point you can kind of flip around and change your mind if you want. How many does that apply to? Things don't have a nature of growing of their own accord, by definition. But chidan kewa rangi teni ke chupa mayins said gane de pe de shenwang ge thone she gane de
shenwang yoge de lak phoge wo mi do ni.
So is the shenwang things which are caused, things which are dependent, is this the category which you think should be left out when we discuss that, or the category that should be left in when we discuss that? Da di ten ne she gane es ma to pia yo ma des shenwang de yebu no
zamo ton de tena ali ni ye yo zamo ko de.
So if you take him by himself, if you treat things which are dependent by themselves, things which grow from other things by themselves, is this the one you'd want to concentrate on when you talk about things not having a nature of growing of their own accord or by definition?
Yeah.
So now he's going to ask, with regard to things that grow from other things, can you say that in the mind on this school?
No.
That it doesn't have any growing by definition. And if you say of the other two categories, oh, these don't have any nature of beginning of their own accord, but by definition. Is that okay? Can you say that about them? So can you use it for both Kundak and Yongdu or not? If you're going to keep lowering the price when you sell this, if you're going to keep lowering the price when you offer me the money for this thing, you know, you should have told me from the beginning that it was going to sell. First you said we couldn't use this expression towards those two, and now you're saying maybe we can use it for one of them. Make up your mind. I don't have to make this up. This is from the text itself, and the text itself says in the sutra called the sutra where I explain the meaning of my sutras, right? It does use this expression for what do you call it? Constructs and for emptiness, and he does not use this expression. He does not refer to dependent things with this expression. So, okay. We'll agree on that. Anyway, jokes get better the hotter it gets. I mean, when the weather is hot, then we need more jokes. Sounds, I think you said that. People will have more and more faith. I didn't get it. Anyway, he's telling more jokes when the weather's hotter and keeps people awake. Faith increases when the teaching gets funnier. How's that? People are more likely to come and leave the food behind. I think that's right. So now we're from page 18, second line from the bottom. We'll be beginning the quotation from the sutra where the Buddha explains his sutras, what he meant when he explained this, when he spoke his sutras. And then they're going to be going through, first at the top of page 19, he specifies when he says Dhammodantama, he's saying, when I say things don't have a nature of going of their own accord or by definition, then he's kicking out the middle one and he's concentrating on the first one and the last one. So he's already agreeing with you on that. And then when he goes down, he starts going down to the four characteristics. This is from the sutra, right? And first he says, he starts going, let me see here. He says things don't start by definition. Things don't stop by definition. Things have been peace from the beginning, meaning not self-existent from the beginning, and things have been nirvana or gone beyond. Right? We talked about it the other day. And he says each one begins to push the other one. Each one triggers the next one. So he says because things don't have a natural growing, then they don't have a natural stopping. Because they don't have a natural stopping, they don't have a natural state of peace. Because they don't have a natural state of peace, they don't have a natural state of nirvana. And each one triggers the next one. Now how that is, he's going to go into it. And we're only referring to constructs right now. We're going to start this explanation only referring to constructs.
Mm-hmm.
Again, it's a process by which each one of the four acts as a justification for the next one. So each one is triggering the next one. So when we say that kundak, things which are constructs, first of all, they don't have any nature of being existing by definition at all. We've already established that. That was the first one. They don't have any nature of existing by definition. Since they don't have any nature of existing by definition, they cannot have a nature of having grown by definition. Now, whether or not they grow, we're just not even approaching that question. Since they don't have any nature of existing by definition, they cannot have any nature of having grown by definition. Anything that hasn't grown can't stop. Okay? Nothing that's grown that hasn't grown could stop. So, needless to say, if you say this thing doesn't have a nature of having grown by definition, then naturally that leads on to the next one, which is they don't have any nature of having stopped by definition. And these two qualities, not having started by definition, not having stopped by definition, is that some kind of quality that suddenly changed? It used to be different, and now it used to be one way, and now it's another way. Like the growth and stopping of things used to be existing by definition, and nowadays doesn't exist by definition because Lord Buddha decided that now it shouldn't exist by definition or something like that. Is that the way that these two lacks of self-nature are? No. They've been that way forever. Ever since the beginning of time. You know, and that's called the Samana Shiva. They have been, in a sense, peace. Peace meaning the state of not existing by definition. The state of not existing self-existently. They have been that way forever. They've been that way since the beginning of the beginning. And that's what the next one means. Samana Shiva means they have been, in a sense, peace or a lack of self-existence from the beginning, and it's not some kind of new story. Then you take, they are forever gone beyond the state of a self-existent birth and self-existent stopping. They've gone completely beyond the state of having been born by some kind of, by definition, and stopping by definition. So if you take some sort of a threshold and you say, this is called grief, okay? This is called grief in a sense, or suffering in a sense. A self-existent starting and a self-existent stopping are called grief, then all kundak things, all constructs, have forever passed beyond that grief. They've always been beyond that grief. And remember that the Tibetan word for nirvana is to pass beyond grief. That's the last of the four. And so when Lord Buddha says that passing beyond grief doesn't exist by definition either, what he's saying is that with regard to constructs, their stopping and their beginning, which has forever been not been existing by definition, they are totally passed beyond that state. They have gone beyond the state of self-existence. And in that sense, they are gone beyond grief, which is the Tibetan word for nirvana.
Okay.
Now here the Buddha is making denial after denial after denial. He's saying, this is not true of this, this is not true of this, this is not this, this is not this, this lacks this, this lacks this, this lacks this, this lacks this. What does he lack? What do they lack? What do you think he's talking? Why is he constantly saying lack, lack, lack? Doesn't have, doesn't have, doesn't have. What doesn't have? What's the very biggest root, crucial thing that isn't there? Ngo Nyi said, Me tu sadi, me said tu sadi, Ngo Nyi said it is. Ko sena, rangi teni ki tuba di res. You're correct. Actually, you're both kind of correct, but you're more correct. And the crucial point is, yeah, from the beginning, in number one, we said that things didn't exist by definition. And that's the key. All the other doesn't exist depend on that. The electricity's gone out. You might want to talk to your batteries in. And it'll come and go now. That's the way it works. This is the only thing. Yeah, that's called me. Does it work? You got it on the battery? This is the comma she chooses to tell me.
My other is the comma she chooses to tell me.
The batteries may last in your camera for 40 minutes, but it won't keep our monastery going for a minute. So you got the main point. It all goes back to number one. It all goes back to the fact that things don't exist by definition. And because that first thing doesn't exist by definition, then the fact that things grow doesn't exist by definition, and then the fact that things stop doesn't exist by definition, and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Each one triggers the next. So we have sort of a logical statement here. We can say, consider constructs, okay? They don't exist by definition because, and can you supply the reason for me? I didn't translate the Dutta correctly, okay? He says, consider constructs. They neither grow nor stop. They neither begin nor stop by definition because... Because they don't exist by
definition.
And that's exactly what Jetsun Kapa says, five lines from the bottom of page 19, when he says, we have to posit as a reason for the fact that constructs don't neither start nor stop by definition. The reason that we can put forth is that, well, they just don't exist by definition. So if you say that for the reason that they don't exist by definition, they don't start and they don't stop by definition, then you're implying that they start and stop a different way. Well, what way would that be? How to say that? 똑배딱 삼기 기원한 가까이니 그걸 우마스 우메고 I shut that mind you make a door you know don't you remember that that's correct the mind you make a door Give Michael that extra key to that door that you've got. Seems like you got this extra key to that door and you keep pointing it out. How about we do it this way? If you say it this way, they have no starting and they have no stopping because they are because they exist by definition. So if you say it that way, then what happens to the starting and the stopping? Because they don't exist. They don't exist by definition. There's no starting and there's no stopping because they don't exist by definition. That gave us a gap of children. If they didn't recognize the Juba Yuna, if you say that they don't have, because they don't exist by definition, they don't have starting and stopping. Now, if they did have starting and stopping, then what would happen? If I go around and hold up this stick and say, this stick has its own starting, and this stick has its own stopping, then in effect, what am I implying? And that's exactly how the Buddha presents it. Looks like we Ali Pengal. He says that's exactly the way the book explains it. If it started by, if it did have a nature of growing and stopping, then it would have to have a nature of growing and stopping by definition. And that's exactly what the book says. We're following a particular line of reasoning where he said because they aren't that, they can be that, and if they were that, they'd have to be the other in a way. And in general, what you said is true, but in this particular line of reasoning, you can't. We're not going that way. Mm-hmm. Don't wander off to those fields out there or anything. Generally speaking, in the mind only school, any kind of starting, any kind of stopping would have to be such that it was by definition. So the implication here is that if something didn't have a starting, and if something didn't have a stopping, which existed by definition, it wouldn't have a starting and stopping at all. And that's what he's been kind of searching around here for. So if you put it into a logical statement of necessity, you have to say that if something has a starting, and if something has a stopping, then it must, by necessity, have a starting and a stopping which exists by definition. So when you asked me just before if there could be any other kind of starting or stopping, if it weren't starting and stopping by definition, you're kind of getting your answer here. It's a necessity both ways. There's a kyaba both ways. If it is in this school, if something has starting and stopping, it must be a starting and stopping which exists by definition. If something has a starting and stopping which exists by definition, then it can have a starting and stopping. And if it doesn't have a starting and stopping which exists by definition, it can't have a starting and stopping. Now, we keep having these little, vignettes where we have little comments, tete-tetes, where you and I discuss something, and then we always have to go back to the book and say, well, here's where the book says that. And then we have to go back to the authority or the basis and say, I'm not just making this up, this is just not some little conversation. This is exactly, this happens to be the next point in the book. And if you want to see where that little last vignette came from, it was page 19, fifth line from the bottom, up to the second line from the bottom. And in there, the Buddha says exactly what we just said. Now, if we divide, if we talk about things, now let's not talk about things that don't exist, okay? Let's just talk about things that do exist, okay? So, if it had a kyo dan gapa yuna, that could cover each other. So, if we restrict ourselves to things that exist, and then we further make the requirement that this thing should not have a beginning or a stopping, well, where do we end up then? Kundata yondu da negres. You are right, and what you just said is correct, because you were thinking in terms of the three groups. But if we don't say in terms of the three groups, if we divide all existing things, I know you guys have studied Jura, elementary logic, and Dagri, elementary, logical forms. So I know you're going to know the answer to this. If you divide all existing things into two categories, what are the two things? Now, where did we end up after we kicked out one of those? And that's exactly what the text says. Page 19, second line from the bottom. By the way, I think I just said, Lord Buddha, I think this is Jetson Kapa's explanation at this point. And it says, what is that thing, what is that thing which is devoid of starting and stopping? What are those existing things which don't have starting and stopping? Oh, dumate, okay? Unchanging things, things which have not been caused or created, okay? Where are we going to put constructs? We're going to put them on the caused side or the uncaused side? Dumate is? Don't forget we've been talking about these four characteristics, right? We finished the one and we're on to the last four. No starting by itself, no stopping by itself, and then peace from the beginning, meaning not self-existence from the beginning. And then the fourth one, remember, was its nature is to be total nirvana, or its nature is to be totally beyond grief. And one meaning of this is that it's totally beyond all negativities, meaning all mentally afflicted things. Okay, so you can interpret the word grief as meaning all mentally afflicted things. All things having to do with mental affliction can be described that way. And then having a nature of being beyond grief can be described as having a nature of being beyond those things which are involved with mental affliction. Mental affliction or involved in mental affliction. Now, among the two kinds of objects, changing and unchanging, where are you guys going to put those, all those mental afflicted things? Now, don't forget, you put the constructs in the unchanging stuff, and then you went and put the mental afflicted stuff in the changing stuff. Is there any mental afflicted stuff that has to do with the constructs? Wait a minute, were constructs staying with the changing stuff or the unchanging stuff? I don't quite like it if you say, you know, that this changing mental afflicted stuff is going to come live in the house of the unchanging constructs. Like, make up your mind. I don't get what he said. But anyway, if the faith has all unchanging things, and then suddenly it gets something out of whack, and something becomes, the nose is like changing, but the face is unchanging, it's not very cute. Make up your mind. You want to talk to the mentally afflicted stuff or the constant? Couldn't that be too much, eh? What? Yes? Didn't you guys already agree that things having to do with mental affliction are changing things?
We can't hold that.
So you have to say that, in a sense, because one is changing and one is unchanging, that constructs living in the unchanging camp, right, are totally free of mentally afflicted things, which are changing things. So in a sense, they are devoid, they are gone beyond, they are a piece of those things. And now he's using those same wording to describe constructs being gone beyond mentally afflicted things, or passed beyond mentally afflicted things, or peace, a state of peace which is free of mentally afflicted things. So we've been describing how constructs are free of all four guys, right? We've had these four guys, which are birth, which starts birth, which exists by definition, ending, which exists by definition, peace, state of being in peace, state of peace, which exists by definition, and then a state of like gone beyondness, which exists by definition. And the first two were easy. You saw how an arisal, which exists by definition, and a stopping, which exists by definition, could not apply to constructs. But now we have to examine, can these last two apply to constructs? And peace means a state of peace which is free of mentally afflicted things. So it's true, you can say about constructs that they are in a state of peace, meaning that they are free of mentally afflicted things. And you can say of constructs as well that they are in a state of nirvana, meaning they're in a state of having transcended or having gone beyond mentally afflicted things. So in that sense, the latter two guys don't apply to constructs. Does that make sense? Is that okay? Right. When they exist by definition.
Because it
doesn't exist by definition. He says it's true whether you add by definition or not. Okay. It's true of constructs that they are a state of peace which is devoid of mentally afflicted stuff. And it's also true of concepts that they are a state of peace which is devoid of mentally afflicted stuff which exists by definition. My fault, I think, in the translation. You have to add the word are not to the first two. They do not have a nature of starting by definition. They do not have a state of nature of stopping by definition. But in the latter two, he's saying they are a state of peace which is devoid of mentally afflicted stuff. And then the fourth one is they are the state where you have gone beyond mentally afflicted stuff. So the second two are, in a way, a positive expression of a negative thing. Okay, they are a state of peace which is devoid of mentally afflicted things, and then they are a state of transcendence or going beyond mentally afflicted things. So that was, I think, it was my mistake in the translation. Okay. Is that okay? Any problems there? Everybody okay? Okay. Sorry for the confusion. When you say peace, you mean, and by the way, in Tibetan the word peace also means death or stopping, you see? So when you say peace or stopping, it means a state of not having that thing anymore, a state where that bad thing has stopped. And when you say transcendence or nirvana in Tibetan, the implication is gone beyond or transcended or passed beyond a state where the thing is suffering or grief, which here means mentally afflicted thing. So you can also describe that triggering process, that progression in that way. So because they don't start by because their starting has no nature of existing by definition, and their stopping has no nature of existing by definition, and because of that, now you can go this way. They are in a state of peace which is beyond, they are in a state of peace in which you have stopped, right? Joke in Tibetan, shi. You are in a state of peace where you have stopped those mentally afflicted things, and then you are in a state where you have gone beyond the grief of the mentally afflicted things. So you can say it that way too. You can describe this progression that way as well. And so now again, I'm going back to the text to give you scriptural authority for the little conversation we just had. Okay, so you go back to page 19, second line from the bottom, and it's here that they identify the peace, for example, and they identify the grief, for example. And here it says peace and a natural nirvana, it says here. You can identify those now as being line 2, page 20, as being kunyong, which means all of those things which have to do with mental affliction. So peace meaning an absence or a rest in peace of the mental afflicted things, and then going beyond mentally afflicted things. And here's the actual scriptural backup for that little conversation with the ten. Before I promised you, we go in two or three groups, right? We left out one of the two groups, and we promised that we would go through the remaining two groups. We have now completed going through the constructs. You can close the case on the constructs, okay? And now we're moving on to Yongduk, which is emptiness in the Manoi school, and we have to describe emptiness in terms of the latter four of the five characteristics that came up during the second turn of the wheel, right? So here we go. First we're going to get the quotation from the sutra, wherein Buddha explains what he meant in the sutra. And then you're going to get the explanation by Jetson Kapa of what that means. So that's a long story. It goes from line 2 or 3 on page 20 down to the next to last line. And Geshe-la says, we don't have to go through that sutra quotation directly, word by word. What we'll do is we'll go to Jetson Kapa's explanation of what that thing means.
Okay.
When we discussed the concepts, because it was already something that description number one applied to, right? Description number one is what? Existing by definition, right? Not existing by definition, right? Out of the five, not existing by definition. So we said that there was a progression that was triggered by the first one all through the end of the five. He said, not existing by definition triggers not going by definition, triggers not stopping by definition, means that it is peace or rest in peace of certain things, and then it was going beyond those things. But now, when you talk about emptiness itself, you don't have to have the first one. You will not have the first one. You can't say of emptiness itself that it is not something which exists by definition. Okay? So we go straight to the second one. Okay, it's not that it's not a five-step process. It's a four-step process. So the place where we step off from, the stepping off place, is not going to be the same. We're not stepping off from it doesn't exist by definition. Now we're stepping off from it doesn't have any nature of starting by definition.
Okay.
Is that okay? That is some of the answer. I have to think about that. Okay. Oh, yeah. Okay. It's not intended to do. It is one of the things that exists by definition, according to their system. It's with number two that we start the things that don't apply to it. I think so. How about you, quiet ones? Is this okay? Everybody knows that. Everybody knows that of the three groups, two of them do exist by definition, and only one of them doesn't exist by definition. Did you guys? Everybody knows that. I forgot that. Anyway, okay. We baked this cake yesterday. Are your problems all removed? Can we move ahead now? Okay. So don't forget, two of the three groups do exist by definition. Right? So you can't use the characterization number one with regard to emptiness. Okay. That everybody clear on that? Okay. The latter two characterizations, which is that it has reached a state of peace wherein the mental afflictions have rest in peace, right? And then the fourth one, which says they have gone beyond or transcended the state of grief. These two are easily applicable to emptiness. These two are easily applicable to Yondu, okay, to totally use the regular testimony. Why? Because obviously emptiness itself is obviously devoid or a state of peace, which is wherein the mental everything related with mental afflictions has ended or stopped. Rest in peace, right? And then the fourth one, obviously, emptiness is something which has passed beyond and gone beyond a state of grief in the sense of grief as something which is mentally afflicted. Okay? They don't apply to emptiness. Now Dzogchen is going back in discussing especially the fact that emptiness itself does not have those qualities of beginning by definition, right? We did these two, right? We didn't do these two yet, and this one doesn't apply. Right? So in discussing whether or not emptiness itself has the quality of starting by definition or ending by definition, right? In discussing that, Jetsun Kapa is going back to the original quotation from the sutra in which the Buddha explains himself in his true intent of the sutras, which covers most of page 20, which takes up most of page 20. And in there, there are some very difficult expressions in Tibetan. When they got translated from Sanskrit into Tibetan, they are difficult. They become difficult expressions. So Jetsun Kapa is trying to help you out with some of the difficult expressions in the sutra when he gets onto the subject of why those two don't apply to emptiness itself. And there's an expression called Tapa Tapa Du and Tesu Tesu Du. Tapa in English means unchanging, as you know. Tesu means in English like self-standing, independent, stands on its own, something like that. And these difficult words, which means the time of the unchanging, unchanging, and the time of the self-standing, self-standing. The first one, Jetsun Kapa says, refers to all the time that came before. So the time of the unchanging, of the unchanging, or the time of the unchanging, unchanging, means all the time that came before us. And the time of the time of the self-standing, of the self-standing, or the time of the independence, refers to all the time which is to come. So these two expressions are referring to all the time that came before and all the time which is to come. What's this got to do that with proving that these two characteristics don't apply to emptiness, right? Or to Yongdu? I have to ask him for a better translation for Yongdu. Okay, Yongdu meaning Yongdu is fixing Yongdu again. The English is not a tentative. But the Tony Yongdu, the Tony is young, young, and then they won't do. Yongdu is Randy fixing.
That's it. Yeah, who cares? You know, you want to get the.
I asked him for a literal explanation of Yongdu because I don't want to keep saying emptiness when he keeps saying Yongdu, because now we got to the point where he's saying Yongdu is emptiness, right? And it means total existence, but that doesn't, it just doesn't seem comfortable to me. I think construct is good for Kundan and things that are dependent is okay for Shenwang, but I don't like this saying total existence. So I asked him, is there a literal explanation of why it's called total existence? Why is emptiness? He says, well, let's go back into that Madhyamika door, and I'll sneak out something that will help you understand how to translate it into English. Dup, the word existence here means, if we talk about a water pitcher, the minute a water pitcher begins to exist, the minute a water pitcher comes into existence, then every single thing to do with the water pitcher, all its parts, everything about the water pitcher, every single tiny piece of the water pitcher is automatically, entirely, totally something that is not self-existent. So upon the state of existence, all, or the totality of the vase, is not self-existent. And that's what total existence means, okay? So how to translate it in the English? I say totally there, or something, I don't know. Totally there, anyway. We'll say totality, okay? Something like that. We'll figure out a word, okay? When I say totality, you know what I'm talking about, okay? Which is emptiness, okay? So now we go back to the point. He says, where do those two weird expressions come in to explaining why totality doesn't have these two characteristics? He says, the first expression is from the beginning of the beginning, right? From forever. And the second expression is for forever, meaning hereafter. So what does that got to do with proving that totality doesn't have these two characteristics? If you start talking about forever either way, then you're already into the category of unchanging things, aren't we? Okay? So the minute you're into the category of unchanging things, you can't say anything about changing things about it. Starting and stopping are words that only apply to changing things. So that's why we can immediately, the reason the sutra is starting to talk about these two characteristics from the beginning and forever after, then the reason is that they are talking about the fact that totality, meaning emptiness, doesn't have any nature, starting or stopping anyway. So you don't have to, you know, go into much detail about it. You know, it's no big deal to explain why they don't have starting and stopping by definition.